want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. Geocache, and if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. I cover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 351, recorded live on May 14, 2014. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat, with
Daryl W4 and
Scott Burks and
Stevens at Infinitum.
You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 63031-VOICE, and also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. Ooh, that was a nice sudden end there. Wow. This episode is sponsored by cache-advance.com for all your geocaching needs. Cache-advance.com. Go find it. Yes, folks and boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, and pets of all ages, you may have noticed that the background for the GeoSnippet Studios has changed slightly. That's because I am in, where am I?
Wilmington,
North Carolina. It's been one of those days. Too much time out on the beach. What can I say? Sun, rise.
Must be rough.
Anyways. Oh, it was awful. Terrible. Geocaching all day and just enjoying the sun and everything else that's going out there.
Geocaching all day. It's a school day today. What are you doing geocaching?
It is, but I'm on a mini vacay. So the wife, Amy, is actually attending some conferences for work, and she said, hey, you want to come along? And I'm like, let me think. Right on the East Coast, right on the ocean, nothing to do but geocache. Yeah, I'll do that.
And plenty of caches you haven't yet found.
There's a lot. There's a lot. There's probably about 1,500 caches in the immediate area. There's a power trail about 15 miles north of me at a wildlife area that has somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 geocaches in the power trail. So I'm going to try to give a whack at that and see what happens tomorrow, depending on how the rain is and how fat the gators are.
Yeah, curse those fat gators.
Well, it is. It's actually a wildlife reservation that you have all these really cool trails to go through. And in Wilmington, down here, we have gators. So you literally have, besides the big snakes, the coral snakes, the scorpions, the four other type of venomous snakes that are here, we've got gators. So you really got to watch it by the water when you're through here. So we'll see what kind of fun I can get into tomorrow. And if I'm not here next week, I'm going to be digested and go that route.
Digested.
You imagine the lump in that puppy. He's not going to walk for a week. Anyways. So how are you guys doing? Daryl, what you been up to?
Oh, not too bad. I'm maintaining my streak through May with a cache a day. Not much more than that. But I did find a really cool cache this week, just kind of by accident. It's listed as a traditional, but it was actually a puzzle cache where it's one of those marble labyrinth gift box kind of things.
Ooh,
where
cool.
They had repurposed that into a cache. And, you know, these things aren't anything that can withstand any kind of weather whatsoever. So what they did is they put it into, you know, one of the lock-and-lock style containers. So, you know, it's protected that way. And then inside that gift, you know, marble labyrinth thing was actually the bison tube with the log inside. So that's how they kept everything kind of safe and protected. But it was a pretty cool cache. You know, not too tough to find it, but opening it up was a different story. And, well, quite frankly, it wasn't too hard to open it up either because all of the lines had been marked from all the previous people trying to get into the cache.
Oh,
take a little bit of the guesswork out.
Is that the one you emailed me earlier in the week?
Yeah, well, I posted it to Google Plus as well.
Oh, that's why I emailed them.
Anyone who's following me on Google Plus, who's marked as a geocacher in my circles, saw that little video, and it was worth checking out. A lot of people replied to it saying, oh, yeah, I've gotten those for my kids or my grandkids. So it's like, these things are out there. They're not too cheap as gift boxes. You know, grab them, or not too expensive as gift boxes. Grab them, and you can do a nice little puzzle cache out of it, and you know, not have as many people upset with you because they can't figure out how to solve that nasty puzzle that you put out on that cache page.
How well built are those? Because you know how geocachers get frustrated.
It's not that easy to break into it. So, you know, yeah, if you wanted to, you could probably force it open, but it wouldn't necessarily break it.
Right. Well, that's not bad.
You know, most cachers I know aren't going to go through that, especially because it's not that tough a puzzle cache.
Yeah. It's cool, though, especially when you got the lines. That makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, well, you know, it's all clear plastic, and it's a metal ball that's rolling around in there, so it's going to wear out eventually, and it's starting to wear, and you can see all the lines where people have gone, so it makes it kind of obvious. Okay, here's the line. Okay, yeah, see, now I see where this path is.
Awesome. So, Mr. Corey, how about yourself? What you been up to?
You know, spring's here, and it's a whole lot better. You know, the caches haven't got that easier. I did finally get an evil one that I've been dreading for about 6 or 7 visits now. It was just notoriously evil. I've yet to log it, but I'm going to, and I think the one that I'm going to log in my post, it'll have probably evil repeated about 32 times, I think. But it was just it was a great job. It was a small bolt cache, and it was just very cleverly done. And I could have sworn I checked it many times, and it kept getting me. And I had to keep asking for help. I looked all around, and it just got me. But I did get to find my first YouTube interactive geocache.
Oh, how was that?
You guys got to see the geocaching vlogger's new YouTube video.
No, I have not seen it yet.
Yeah, he's got his new video that was posted today, and as you go on it, go check it out. It's called Interactive Geocache Game, and he actually takes you to a geocache site, and you get to pick some choices and see if you can find the geocache.
Well, way to go. Thanks, Joshua.
Yeah, out of all the choices, it took me all the choices, and the last one that I chose, I found it.
Wow.
So
that's cool. Well, Daryl, how does that play in the rule books? I mean, how does that work?
Well, you don't get to claim anything. It's just going to be, you know, an online game. And the first of those that I actually remember was by a cacher who was still in, I believe, high school when she did it. This is when the interactive stuff first came out, what, 6, 7 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
It was a pretty interesting technology, but it takes some serious effort to get it set up and working right, especially if you don't want it to be obvious that it's cut and spliced to get all the right moves in there.
Wow.
It's basically a choose-your-own-adventure kind of book kind of situation.
Yeah, so it was kind of fun. I mean, it wasn't. It's nothing that's posted on geocaching.com, and he lets you know at the end of it. But it was something fun to do, and I could see how somebody may be able to get away to doing something like that to kind of get a clue as a portion of maybe a multi-cache or something like that, but not as a full geocache.
Well, what I'd really like to see is someone try to take that methodology, you know, take that interactive technology and use it as the puzzle. So you have to work your way through historical clues or something to collect the information that you want. Because one of the neat things about that is you don't have to go just to your own videos, too. You could actually take people out to someone else's video and, you know, have them watch something on, you know, the War of 1812.
That's right. I'm gonna get them Rickrolled.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and you know that someone's gonna do that.
That's awesome. All right. Well, we'll have to see how that goes. And again, way to go, Joshua. So yeah, good stuff. Josh and I have a good relationship. He comes around all the time. Yeah, all right. Good stuff. So let's move on to the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community. And what's coming up this week, Daryl, on GeoGearheads?
Well, this week is our 23rd randomized show, and we've got Scott's old co-host, Walt Grogan.
Wally. Awesome.
Yeah, Wally's going to be on. So
Wally going to be on the show.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking some Android news, so that will be pretty cool. And, of course, we're doing the giveaways, and this time we have a GeoCoin that we're going to be giving away live at the opening of the show.
That is awesome. And this week on the GeoSnippets Reboot podcast, wife Amy and I, we're going to do some form of a mishmash show tomorrow, depending on how well the Wi-Fi seems to be holding up pretty good here in the hotel. But we're going to probably do a shortened show tomorrow. And we are going to start our contest where for the next 4 weeks, we're going to be giving away WWFM 11 GeoCoins, one each week. And tomorrow, we're actually going to see about having a live giveaway tomorrow and go that route. So be sure to stop on by as well to the GeoSnippets Reboot podcast before you head over to GeoGearheads. So mine shows at 8:30. Daryl shows at 9:10, 9:15, depending on which way the crow flies. Check them both out. They're definitely a good listen to and a good watch because we have a lot of fun. All right, let's move on to the geocaching question of the day.
Hey, cachers, I'm Lookout Lisa from Cache Advance, your host for the geocaching question of the day. Well, I've been caching since 2002, and I've been in the business of geocaching since 2005. Monday through Thursdays, we ask our followers on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+ a question about geocaching. We recently asked, do you have any geocaching-related stickers on your car, truck, or bike? Well, after tallying the answers, we found that a whopping 86% of you have one or more, sometimes many more, geocaching stickers on your georigs. Well, Kitty on Facebook said, Travelbug, a geocaching.com, and a Geocaching Australia sticker. I've met a few geocachers because they commented on my stickers. Hey, that's awesome, Kitty. Well, RJMCKE on Twitter shared, I used to have a TV sticker on my old truck that I bought from us, Cache Advance. Sold the truck and the sticker went with it.
What?
So here is where a little product placement goes in. As the Groundspeak authorized and licensed manufacturer of all vehicle travel bugs, we can make you a replacement TB. Just go to our website and search for the vehicle travel bug special order to purchase one whenever you need one or more made up. And now, here's a pro tip. Have us make a magnetic one, too, for those times you rent a rig and want to bring your trackable along. Well, hey, we really enjoyed hearing about geocaching stickers on georigs, and you can, too, if you follow us, Cache Advance, on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, for the geocaching question of the day. Thanks, and happy caching.
Well, thank you, Lisa. And, sorry about that. I have a travel bug on the back of my car. I mean, I think you go to a lot of the events and you see a lot of them all over the place, and there's so much creativity that they're always good. And, you know, it was Daryl. Wasn't it you that was talking about not too long ago? I'm not even going. The guys are doing signs. Never mind. So, Daryl, we were talking – you were talking with Bad Cop not too long ago of an app of a quicker way of loading travel bugs when you go to these events.
Yeah, that was actually last week's show or 2 weeks ago's show on GeoGearheads. We were talking about the Project-GC website, which is a great tool. I haven't used it before we booked the show for about a year. And it's come so far in that year that if you haven't checked it out, you definitely need to check it out again. And one of the cool things is that you can just put in a list of all the travel bugs, and it will log all of those with a standard log that you drop in the next field. So,
there's a site that does that too, right?
Well, that's what it is. It's project-gc.com.
No, but there's like a site that does that too. It's like logemall.com or something like that, or that org.
Oh, there could be another one like that too. But Project GC is the one that we were talking about, and it's a free site to use for that.
Yeah, but is it free to do that, or do you actually have to pay? Do you have to be a paying member?
That part is free.
Oh, it is free.
Yeah, it's only the more. Yeah, it's only the more intense processes that are limited to the paid users on Project Jest-GC.
Well, you're pretty intense, Daryl, so do you.
Well, I do
yeah,
have
we just saw his listing of going to Woodstock. And
I know.
Like,
all you guys, you missed.
Gosh.
Daryl, nerding out with Excel. It was impressive.
I'm using no Microsoft products.
Oh, sorry. An Excel-like spreadsheet.
It's all Google. Well, no. It's Google Docs or Google Sheets so that I can grab it on the phone. You know, it's very important to have access from the phone so that you can update that in the field.
Oh,
geeks are
extra special nerds. Well, I can fix it in the field.
Wow.
See you.
Well, I'm sure we're going to be talking about it a lot on the trip down to Geo Woodstock, because Bad Cop from Geo Gearheads and I are going to be heading down together. He's actually flying out here, and then we're going to head down to Geo Woodstock together.
Oh, geez.
So that's, you know, 7-8 hours in the car, whatever it is, and we'll have the recorder. So I'm sure that all of the Geo Gearheads listeners with the Patreon access, or anyone that we happen to pass out one of our little cards to for the special content, will get the full story on how all that works.
I don't want to be a patron, so can I just get the special content?
Well, yeah, you just have to find us at Geo Woodstock and get one of the cards from us.
Oh, I will find you at Geo Woodstock.
Yeah, and you'll get one of those cards, so you'll have access to all that content.
All right.
Well, there you go.
Sorry, Andy, go ahead.
Wait, it's all right. It's good, because it's actually – we are doing episode 351, which happens to be the May Casher Coffee. And so anything goes tonight, guys, as far as talking. And that's part of the fun, including three perks of your podcast.
You could write something on that, Daryl? Come on.
Well, that's the card that you're looking for.
Why don't we get into a subject that we'll go from there? Let's see. Tonight, we're going to just kind of ramble around, but one of the bullet points that came up is, will the new cheaper Android smartphones usher in more geocachers? And I guess I'll let you guys start off with this, because I've already got something to kind of counter that one. So why don't we start off with that one? Will this bring in more geocachers?
Will it bring in? I mean, sure. I mean, yeah. Sure. I mean, yeah. But obviously, it's a cheaper smartphone. And obviously, you know, if more people are going to buy it, they'd be silly because they're not buying an iPhone. But if you're going to buy an Android, then yeah, you know, buy a really cheap one. Oh, I went there. Look at it, Daryl. I went there.
Yeah, and, you did.
So yes, will it significantly add to it? No, but I think will the numbers jump up? Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, you know, people trying it for the first time. Yeah.
Well, how much of a base is left that doesn't have a smartphone? I mean, how much percentage actually has a smartphone?
I don't know.
There are quite a number of people. A lot of them are people who just don't want the complexity of a smartphone. So what they're starting to do, and where this is really going to make a difference to those kind of people who want the old-fashioned, you know, flip phone, you know, feature phone type of phones, everyone is trying to get away from those phones, and these new cheaper Android phones are targeted at those users. So what you're getting are, you know, like the moms and the, you know, your grandparents who just don't want that complexity. You know, they want something that's simple that just works. You know, I want my old rotary dial phone back.
Right.
Now, is it going to affect with the quality of the chip that's going in for?
Well, here's what I heard as a good analysis on one of the tech shows of the new Moto E. And the Moto E is the latest cheap phone. You're talking $130 US, no contract. So you can walk in, buy the phone for $130 without anything, you know, without any wireless package or anything, and then, you know, use it just as a phone without, you know, any kind of connection if you wanted to, which how would a phone make much sense if you can't connect to anything? Yeah. But, you know, if you wanted it just as a Wi-Fi enabled device, you know, it's $130. That's all it is. You know, no contracts.
Now,
isn't
that hitting a lot of the? I want to say Asian and some of the other. Well, I know they're trying to hit countries.
Yeah, it is a world phone, and they are targeting that. But it's really targeted at taking away the feature phone market and moving them into the smartphones. You know, this is essentially a 2011 comparable phone. You know, this is specs that you're not going to see anything that low on a current smartphone. However, it's still capable enough if you're looking to replace your dumb phone with a smartphone.
Right. So it's not top of the line, but it's not a flip phone either. It's the bottom. Well,
but if you're willing to step up, they do have the Moto G, which we've talked about before, is a really nice phone for the price, and they just upgraded that to LTE. So if you're on an LTE-capable carrier, you can get $180, I want to say it is, for the Moto G with LTE. That's a much more capable phone, and that's actually a decent phone. People really like that phone all the way around, you know, considering that it's $180, no contract.
You know, now, again, is this going to open up a boon for a company like geocaching.com or Groundspeed?
See, that's what I wonder, and I don't know, and a lot of the reason that I think it could is because of that geocache intro app that they just came out with. And this is one of the things that we've had on iOS and has been amazing.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not new.
Well, it's new on Android.
Getting a smartphone, it would be.
Yeah, but here's what I wonder is because this is, you know, these newer, cheaper phones are mostly targeting the feature phone users who aren't the ones who are going to go to the App Store. I'm not thinking that this is going to have much of an effect on geocaching. You know, when we had this smartphone revolution with the iPhone, with the Android phones hitting the market and really becoming usable mass market devices, we saw a huge influx of cachers. And it changed caching, and caching is continuing to shift because of that. You know, when I got into caching back in 2005, you had to have a GPS to go caching.
Yes.
Right.
So it really limited the number of people that could go caching because you had to have at least $300 to plunk down on a phone. Now, granted, you could get one that's used and, you know.
Right. But, yeah, because when I started in 2008, it was the same. That's like when the iPhones first, you know, the second generation of the iPhone came.
Yeah, you had to be on the 3G to get the GPS. 3G. Yeah.
And that's when I was like, oh, because I remember seeing geocaching years ago and I didn't want to buy a GPS. And so I said, well, someday, that's pretty cool. But then once the 3G came and you could actually geocache on it, that's when I started.
Yeah, and because it became more accessible without getting any hardware, any additional hardware, and people were looking for something to do with these cool new devices, so they were looking for those apps, and one of the apps that they found was geocaching. So people were buying the geocaching app, going out geocaching. Some of them stuck around, some of them didn't, but it changed the demographics of geocachers as a whole, because now you had a different group who didn't need to have those specialized devices. And as smartphones have become more prevalent and more available at cheaper prices, you know, that demographic continues to shift and the type of cachers shift.
Right. Well, of course. Also, you know, once you get into the iPhone era or the, you know, the smartphone era, you actually, you know, I guess for the lack of a better term, the less geeky people started playing because, you know, I mean, back in 2005, to have a GPNL GPS, you know, not everybody had one of those. You had to be kind of be like, you know, like a science geek or, you know, like, you know, some kind of GPS geek to have one. Nothing, there's anything wrong with that. Trust me, I'm one. I don't judge. But
in terms of hikers,
but in terms of what Andy was saying, do I think it's going to add that many? You know what? The reason I say no or very little is because of somebody who's buying that kind of a smartphone. I don't think they're looking like Daryl said previously. You know, it's more of an older generation might be getting that or something like that. But I don't think it's somebody who's looking for something to do with that phone. I just think it's somebody who wants a smartphone just so they can upgrade from their flip phone. So I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference.
Yeah, personally. Well, that's the whole thing. Is this is the new cheaper phones are targeted at that feature phone market, and most smartphone users never download additional apps. And this end of that market, they're the ones who will not be downloading the apps, so they're not going to get into it. They're going to have someone that drags them into it. And granted, I think we are going to see some new cachers because of it, but I don't think it's going to be significant.
Right.
Well, one of the things that I was curious about, and I've been curious about for a while with the when we did have the big boon from the smartphones, we generated what I kind of refer to as throwaway cachers, people that come in, they do geocaching for X amount of weeks or months, and then just give up the sport. It seemed like the spike was so vast when that started going, and still is to this day because of the influx of people with smartphones. does that deteriorate the sport?
Well, I don't. I would have to say no, just straight out no, because this is not something that's isolated to the smartphones. We've always had that problem. We've talked with many people on Cachemaniacs. I continue to talk with people now who set up their accounts, went out, tried to find one cache, never went caching again, and then had someone else drag them into it later on. So we've always had that problem. The impression I've been given by some of the folks who know a little bit more about the demographics of geocachers than I do is the percentage of those cachers who come and try it and leave is about the same. We haven't seen much of a change there. But what we saw was a huge spike in the number of cachers coming into the sport. So you got a lot more cachers coming in. You had a lot more cachers dropping out, too. But percentage-wise, it wasn't much of a change.
Yeah, but what's that jump on, like, the occasional cachers, like the you know, the vacation cachers or something like that, or somebody who goes out maybe, you know, once a month rather than every weekend?
Yeah, again, it's the very active cachers continue to grow. So I don't think you're seeing that. You know, we don't have good stats because it is, you know, something that Groundspeak keeps very tight. They don't let much out. But the impression that I've gotten from the... Scott's enjoying this too much. The impression I've gotten is you're not looking at huge changes in percentages. So the vast majority of cachers always have been more casual. We're going to go out and hit a cache here and there when we're on vacation, when we're out hiking with the family. You know, the number of the cachers we spoke with on Cachemaniacs were pretty much in that level. And we had a lot of cachers who were really serious about it. You know, the cachers that are really serious are the ones who are going to be listening to the show. They're the ones who are out there hiding the caches. They're going to be hiding the better caches. But it's all these little cachers who keep the game going and bring more people in. You know, oh, yeah, I've done caching. All it takes is, you know, a couple of good caches, and some of them get hooked and turned into the major cachers. And then there's a cachers. Mm-hmm. You know, I know so many people who go out and do a whole bunch of caches. They'll hit, like, the ET Highway, then they'll hit the Route 66, and then they'll go and do this cache and that cache. And then all of a sudden, I'm burned out. I don't want to do any more caching. They go away. 2 years later, they're back again. So it's just, you know, like anything else, it ebbs and flows.
I've seen that exact stat, exactly what you're talking about there. But what I'm also curious about is how much of an influx of the park and grab quickie lamppost type hides get put out as opposed to the quality caches because of the influx coming in of new geocachers.
Well, see, that goes back to, I think, you hide what you find. So
I don't think it's going to be anything compared to just because of a cell phone. It's going to be to the community that's around you. I mean, if a person gets involved alone and that's what they find, and they go, okay, I want to hide one because, hey, this is cool, that's exactly what they're going to do. But if they find some that's creative or they get hooked up with a friend and say, hey, and they take them to some favorited ones and they see the variety of stuff and they say, you know, and they find some other stuff, they're going to start finding some stuff, or they're going to start hiding some stuff that's better quality. You know, my first one was actually an Altoids can because the first few that I found were mostly Altoids cans, you know, and things like that. I was like, well, it's a hardy enough case.
Point of reference.
You know, so it was really what I deemed appropriate because that was what was being hit around my area.
Yeah. Now, here's the point that I think you're really trying to get to, Andy, is what most people complain about the smartphone cachers coming into the sport is, unlike the cachers who had to buy the GPS and learn how to use the GPS, with smartphones, it's really easy to just throw up a pin on Google Maps or on Apple Maps or whatever and get your location. So they don't have the experience or discipline to get good coordinates when they do hide a cache. So that is where we really see problems with the new cachers, is they just haven't learned how to get good waymarks or waypoints. And the people who came into this with the GPS know that it's not as easy as just hit a button and you know where you are.
Right. They're almost going back to the point where we were originally seeing the smartphones come on the scene, especially the iPhone at that time, where it was just people just rolled their eyes when they heard that you hit a cache using an iPhone.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're pretty – I mean, in fact, the last week I hit two caches with my iPhone. And I knew that I was with my iPhone. So once I got the cords, I went back home and I was creating the cache pages. I actually went to Google Maps. Mm-hmm. And plotted it on Google Maps, and then, you know, did a little shifting, a little here or there, a little, you know, up a couple numbers, down a couple numbers to find out exactly where it was. So anybody hiding with an iPhone, it's a good tip, is you could always go into Google Maps, punch in your north and west coordinates, and just tweak them.
Yeah.
And just tweak them to where they go.
And that's true of any GPS, not just an iPhone or an Android phone. There are all kinds of methods that you can use, including the Google Maps, which is the best one if you can't go out on multiple days. But you're still best to go out with multiple days and or multiple devices and get multiple readings. And you'll find when you do that, you're never going to get the same reading from any device in the same location any 2 days. It just isn't going to happen. But in
the middle of the woods, a GPS will get you pretty close. You know, as long as you're not hiding them. As long as you're not hiding
routine, there's ways for it to settle. I mean,
of course. But like, if you're hiding, you know, a regular in the woods compared to a micro in the woods, you know, you could be 20 feet off and people know where it is. You know, I mean, you could see, usually, if you're somewhat experienced cacher, you could see the stick of flies, or you could see, you know, where do you think it's going to be hidden. Compared to a micro, where you've got to be kind of, you know, dead on accurate, you know, with the cords, so somebody knows where they're looking.
Yeah, but anyone who has any experience with using GPSs or smartphones to hide caches knows very well that every unit is a little bit different. You know, if you have like the Colorados, one of the big things that Garmin was telling people is do not average. If you average, you will end up with worse coordinates than if you just hit the waymark.
You know, I know that one.
Yeah, the GPS has a tendency to drift. And this is true of a lot of the new high-accuracy GPSs. When they stop moving, they're looking for movement, so they try to figure out what the subtle changes are, and you'll actually get worse readings than if you just hit that button. So it's the old GPSs are a lot like the new iPhones and Android phones, where you need to do an average because they're going to be inaccurate, especially if you don't let them settle. And the biggest problem with any smartphone is almost everyone who goes and does a cache placement fires it up, opens up the GPS app, and marks it.
Right,
you're getting the tower location. Yeah. You're not getting the location that you're at right then, because that GPS has to stay live. And on most of those devices, there's even multiple levels of accuracy. And if you go into like your car navigation app, it's using a lesser accuracy than like the geocaching app does, because it doesn't need to know where you are down to, you know, the 5 foot level. It only needs to know that you're, you know, within 30 feet of the street, and then it's going to drop you on the street in the closest location.
Right.
Yes.
So rule of thumb: if you're hiding a cache, you know, just throw the northwest coords on Google Maps and see where it winds up.
Yeah. Yeah. You definitely want to do that with a satellite view. That's a good way to check.
It takes 5 minutes. Yeah, it takes 5 minutes.
And I do that with anything with any GPS, you know, whether it's smartphone or not, just to make sure that it looks right.
Well, you're just a bad hider all around. So.
I'll tell you what. I want to thank the geocacher. I was going for a geocache today that had ground zero in the center of a main road and two possible sides on both sides of the road to find. Those are always fun, too.
I love those. Middle of the road, yeah.
I love those. Yeah. All right, gentlemen. Well, the clock on the microwave in the hotel room says we're at that time. Thank you so much. This was an excellent discussion. Good stuff for a cash or coffee or anything. And we hope you fine folks got a bunch out of that as well. Be sure to let us know by going to the geocachingpodcast.com website and either hit the form and let us know what you think on there, or send to headhardhead@geocachingpodcast.com as well. We're also going to have the other hosts' social network links coming up in the next week or two. We're updating the website as we speak. and we appreciate your patience with that. We're also in the process of trying to get all our archived files back in place as well. So if you're wondering where everything went, we apologize. It was unavoidable, and we're trying to get everything back in place now. So we beg your indulgence when it comes to that. All right, folks, it is time to move on. We want to thank you, our wonderful subscribers, for watching and listening to the Geocaching Podcast. We want to thank cache-advance.com for everything that they do with the show. Let's move on. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Ed Hard Hat production and is produced by Daryl Wattenberg and Andy Smith. This show is copyright 2014 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.